Welcome to this week's Debriefing of the Law. I am Joel Oster, your host, and today we have a special guest, a good friend of mine. He is a former state representative. He is a college professor and now a podcaster. I think that he is just moving his way up the ranks. Well, Dan, it is good to have you on the show this week.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Dan, I know you are entering into the podcasting business, and you are the common sense guy, which, since I have known you your entire life, I got to tell you that that makes sense to me. I think you strive to bring common sense to the world. Now, are you trying to bring common sense to the area of politics?
Common sense is sorely needed in politics, and it's not easy to find it there right now.
So you are going to try to bring try to cut right through to the middle, cut the partisanship out, and look just at what actually is happening in the area, in our world.
That's exactly what we're doing.
Well, good luck with that. I can't imagine trying to do that. Well, you know what? Today you can practice.
Well, seems fair to me.
Yeah, because we're going to go over the various headlines, and I would like to, I guess, get the common sense approach to what is going on. But before we get there, and I'm telling you, this last week was a crazy week in the area of law. Trust me, folks, you are not going to believe the stuff we're going to cover today. But nonetheless, before we get there, Dan, we had a really big week. In fact, tomorrow is going to be the Kansas City Chiefs are playing the Tennessee Titans for the right to go to the Super Bowl. Now, this podcast will be airing after the game is completed. So I want to put you on the spot here, because by the time this is aired, we're going to know what's happening. But what is your prediction for this game?
Kansas City will win the game 38-21, and then they will play San Francisco in the Super Bowl.
Interesting. All right, Kansas City's going to win 38-21?
Yes.
So a 17-point spread?
Yes.
All right. Well, I do believe the betting line is down to 7. So there you go. Put your money on the line. I believe the Kansas City Chiefs in will be successful. I think you're right on that. My take on this game is that there is a lot of fear about how great Tennessee is. Henry is their running back, huge force. But even though he's a huge force, they are barely scoring points. I think they only scored 14 until a late score against New England. And then they lost to Houston a couple of weeks ago. And then last week they beat a Ravens team. But I don't believe they ever scored without a turnover. And so their offense never drove the field without a turnover. And so I'm not too scared of Tennessee, I guess I should say.
I think it's wise to realize that Tennessee is a very good team, but the biggest game Tennessee had until the playoffs was a home game against Houston, which could have given them the lead in the division to win the division title and possibly even get a bye, and Houston beat them handily in Nashville that day.
And that was just a few weeks ago,
right? That was just a few weeks ago. So that when it mattered the most for Tennessee, they couldn't bring it until they got to the playoffs, in which case they've had no pressure on them, and so they've been able to bring it against New England and Baltimore.
So this idea that Henry is this unstoppable force is, I'm not seeing it. They only scored 14 points against New England until a late score. How are you unstoppable, and yet for 60 minutes of the game, you can only manage 14 points?
Derrick Henry is somebody that Marty Schottenheimer would like a lot.
You know, that actually is a great, great analysis. In fact, I think that that's who the Chiefs are playing this week. They're playing the 1990 Kansas City Chiefs, coached by Marty Schottenheimer.
Except that Marty's Chiefs hardly ever made the championship game. So, in fact, the only time they did is when they had a quarterback named Montana.
Okay, touche. That is correct.
So, in a sense, Mike Vrabel's gotten them further than Marty could. But the idea of run the ball, pass when you have to, and play good defense. That concept of football is what Tennessee is doing.
And it's a good concept.
It's worked very well so far. However, when the Chiefs played the Titans earlier, Mahomes threw for 450 yards. And the Titans won that game 35-32 after a fourth quarter of 4 or 5 really weird things that happened to give them that victory.
And I think we can agree that Tennessee's approach to winning football is good. It's solid. But it is dependent upon the Chiefs messing up. If the Chiefs play their game, it will not be close.
And there is my forecasted prediction because I don't believe the Chiefs will make that many mistakes in the game.
All right, so there you go. That is our prediction. By the time this podcast is airing, either we will have won, played that in its entirety because we will show how brilliant we are, or we will have cut it and it will be deleted because we don't want to know how people see how stupid we are when it comes to the world of sports. But nonetheless, big Chiefs fan. Speaking in the area of sports, Dan, this last week there was a very interesting legal issue. I think it's a legal issue coming up with the Houston Astros. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes.
What happened there with the Houston Astros? So they were engaged in cheating. Now, I remember, I think it was Yogi Berra who said, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But nonetheless, what happened?
The Astros have been accused, and Major League Baseball has now has written a report, so this is official, that they were stealing signs using electronic devices. So using recording devices. Baseball has a rule. Obviously, everybody's trying to steal signs all the time, but you're not allowed to use technology to do it.
Okay, so it has to be fair on the playing field, not use this advanced technology.
Visual, hand signals, things like that. You can't be recording someone and then flashing it down. The Astros were doing it, and going back through with footage, they were doing it by hitting a baseball bat on a trash can.
Interesting. That sounds like...
Which is really interesting.
Not exactly advanced technology, but nonetheless, that's what they are
doing.
But
they were recording the sign, and then that can would be hit if it was a certain type of pitch. And if it wasn't that type of pitch, the can wouldn't be hit.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but this stealing, this cheating was going on during the World Series that went 7 games.
It does seem like the Dodgers might have a legitimate complaint. Both Kershaw and Darvish got hit really hard in that series in Houston, which is where Houston would have had the technological setup. It's problematic. Now, the interesting factor is the bench coach for those Houston Astros who, according to the MLB report, was the mastermind of this whole thing, actually then went and became the manager of the Boston Red Sox, and they won the World Series over the Dodgers the next year.
Wow, the Dodgers were robbed of 2 World Series by cheaters.
It could be. Now, Red Sox beat the Dodgers 5-1. That series...
4-1, I assume.
Yeah, yes, that'd be a good point. It was a 5-game series.
Okay.
That series wasn't really that close, and so it's a little harder to say that a little bit of cheating impacted it, but certainly the 2017 series, you can make that argument.
And I can't help but think, in the NFL, there has been several allegations that the McCheaters, that would be the New England Patriots, for those of you who are not strong football followers, and this is not just my opinion. It has been proven that they have cheated. They have admitted guilt to cheating on several different instances. One, it was during a World Series, or Super Bowl. Somewhere in the early 2000s, they were playing the St. Louis Rams, and Kurt Warner, one of my favorite quarterbacks of all time. It was that Super Bowl, and the Patriots recorded their walkthrough. So they got firsthand glance at the plays they were going to run, and they ended up winning that Super Bowl.
They won the Super Bowl by a really low score compared to what that St. Louis team had been averaging. And defensively, they were aided a lot and were able to shut down the greatest show on turf is what that team was known as.
And now you know why. They knew what plays they were going to run because they watched and recorded their walkthroughs. And then they were caught videotaping signals on the opposing sidelines, and that became a whole ordeal. Again, they got busted and disciplined for that. Let's not even get started with Deflategate. It'd just be interesting to see how things shake down there in Major League Baseball. Well, I want to now move over to the Weinstein case. Dan, have you followed the Weinstein case?
I've tried not to.
It's going to be an interesting case.
It's sad. At this point, it's in the legal system, which means it's going to be slowed down considerably from what most of us would like as far as news.
Now, when you say you don't want to, what is your fear about the Weinstein case?
I have no fear particularly. I know the kind of behavior that's been accused of going on is rampant. Not only in Hollywood, but in society at large. And I have no doubt that this guy did what the women have claimed he's done. It just, it's one of those things where I wish that kind of thing wasn't there. I wish it didn't happen.
Now, when you say you have no doubt.
I get frustrated hearing about it, that it did.
Now, when you say you have no doubt that he did, here's one of the problems that the public always has with the legal profession. Because the evidence that is used in court is not necessarily the evidence that gets discussed out in public and gets reported on the airwaves. So we either think we know more or we actually do know more than what the actual jurors are going to know about this case. And so a jury has been selected this last week. You have, I believe, 7 guy jurors and 5 women on this jury. And so a jury has been selected, and so we will update this case as it goes along. All right, Dan, I want to talk about this case that came up a lot last week, a Kansas duel case. So apparently there was this Kansas guy who asked a court, and I believe he was in Iowa, but nonetheless it was a custody case somehow involving a divorce and custody. And he asked the court a very interesting maneuver. I got to admit, I've never asked for this. But now that I have heard about this case, I am thinking I might ask for it in several cases. He asked that his trial be by duel. Now, Dan, have you ever heard about like, someone asking to resolve a matter in court by a duel?
Well, there was an old saying that went by in practicing law, particularly litigation and particularly in family law, that the client or the person who represents himself has an idiot for a client.
That is true.
That's not fair in many cases because a lot of people can't afford attorneys. But in this case, I think this may be accurate. I will say there's a possibility that this whole filing is sarcastic on the part of the guy who filed it. But evidently, he's got a major problem with his ex-wife's attorney and has even offered that the wife can have the attorney fight the duel instead of her. In fact, I think that's what he really wants. I think he has a vendetta against this attorney, and so he filed a motion asking for a duel against the wife's attorney.
I love it. So he asked the judge for a 12-week extension or a continuance of the matter so that he could obtain or secure Japanese samurai swords. So apparently he is really trying to do this the right way. He wants a 12-week extension or continuance so that he can obtain actual Japanese samurai swords. He then filed a motion with the court. Actually, let me backtrack here. I would think this would be absurd. I mean, if you were the lawyer on the other side, how would you respond to this request to a duel?
Well, actually, I'd have fun with it, but I don't do that anymore. And this lawyer seems like he maybe is a little bit. His response, as I understand it, is that, well, since the duel could result in death of one of the parties, it's a little too extreme to actually be carried out in the court's orders.
I can't imagine that. Yes, exactly. He apparently took it seriously and formulated a reasoned response, which I am not thinking this would be a motion that would warrant a reasoned response. But nonetheless, this is what he said. He argued his legal response was that because a duel could end in death, as you alluded to, such ramification likely outweigh those of property tax and custody issues. I think he probably did not need to qualify that. I think he probably could either said, yes, it does outweigh the property tax and custody issues, but nonetheless, I guess word is still out. Yeah, the court has not yet ruled on that request.
Well, that's one of the things where, you know, that one might be where you could actually just file a motion to dismiss and simply put in your actual language, please dismiss, and then just sign it. You maybe don't even need to put actual legal reasoning on that one. It's probable that the judge could figure that out on their own.
And Dan, this is why I do what I do. I teach this class. I teach lawyers continuing education classes, and we cover the wackier side of the law. And yes, you can pretty much be guaranteed that this story will find its way into my next year's class, because I am not sure I've ever seen anything crazier than asking the other side to a duel. Though, to be fair, I'm also thinking there are some opposing counsel. I might actually, depending on how this works out, ends up, I might ask the court to let's engage in a duel.
Well, I would totally agree that that if you're practicing law, that you may very well find other attorneys that you think that might be a good idea.
You know, I got my gym.
If you're doing that in a class, I suggest you get a couple swords and actually role play it during your class.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
I can get some samurai swords. You know what? You can get anything on eBay these days. I assume if I go to the internet right now, I can find myself some good samurai swords and be prepared. And we can teach it and get CLE credit. Now, Dan, you are a genius.
There you go.
And if the state bar says, Joel, I'm not sure that sword fighting really constitutes legal education, I'll say, hey, I got a case for you to review. And then I will prove them wrong, and we will engage in samurai sword training. All right, well, I don't know how we move on from that one, but let's move on now to the impeachment trial. This is a big deal in the news. I assume most of the people are either actively following impeachment or actively trying to avoid following the impeachment. Dan, what side do you fall on?
Well, I follow.
You're trying to follow the impeachment.
I don't really have a choice since I'm doing political commentary.
And you're going to bring common sense?
That is exactly right. We'll be doing an entire special podcast just on the impeachment concept and on what it means legally, what the historical precedent is, what high crimes and misdemeanors mean, and how that should be being applied today. I would tell you right now, I'm not a particular big fan of any of the parties in that equation. I don't believe that impeachment is the proper way to go here. I think if you want to beat Trump, there's an election this November, and that's how you do it.
Okay, there's several things you just mentioned. I want to unpack them. Let's start off here, first off, with terms of impeachment. It's my understanding that impeachment is a political process. In other words, that is some people saying, we think that the president has done things that means or warrants his removal from office. Would you agree with that?
That's exactly what it is.
Now, when I say a political process, it has to be bipartisan. Either it has to be bipartisan or one party has to really control America. It requires a 67% of the senators to go along with this jury conviction.
The sad thing is, and this was, again, probably pure genius by the founders of the country, but the truth of the matter is, in many ways, it would be better if there was a little bit higher threshold to get out of the House. That way, because at this point now, we've had two impeachments in the last 22 years, neither of which were legally and politically solid. They were both, we don't like that guy, so we're going to impeach him. And the truth is, all it takes to get out of the House is a simple majority. So if one party controls the side or the House, then in theory, all they have to do, like the Democrats did this time, is just everybody votes for it. Doesn't matter if the other side votes or not.
So any party that just controls a simple majority, which obviously one party will, so this
absolutely
really can be done with every single president that ever is to be, because as long as we're a two-party system, one side will have the votes.
Well, in theory, for six of Obama's 8 years as president, the Republicans controlled the House. In theory, they could have at any time, over Benghazi or anything else, they could have said, we're going to impeach Obama, and just voted through an impeachment. It wouldn't have had a chance of clearing the Senate, but it would have still been an impeachment.
So a conviction in the Senate would require significant bipartisan support, but the just bringing the charges, one party can do it because they don't like the other side. Now, what is the danger? Is that a good or bad thing? I'm thinking with Clinton, his impeachment. Obviously, one party brought the impeachment. Now, that case actually did involve a crime. It involved lying, perjury. So there was an actual crime at play. But does that crime really warrant removing a president from office? Or do you think the public really viewed that crime as being, this is one side trying to set a trap for the other side that he then fell through, but this is not something that we remove a president for?
I really don't know that we've ever seen a president engage in activity that justified removal based on what the intention of the original writers of the Constitution was.
Why do you say that? What was the original intention?
I believe treason. I believe it has to go to a level. Remember, they were writing it at a time when the country was very not stable. It was very uncertain on what was going forward.
Now, the Constitution says bribery, treason, or other high crimes or misdemeanors. So you're saying that the other high crimes and misdemeanors needs to be of like ilk to treason and bribery?
And I believe even bribery. I don't think they're talking about bribing the Little League coach to call better balls and strikes on your son's team.
Or simply saying, look, you got to do something for me if you want me to pass this legislation and give you money.
Right.
It has to be something more significant, almost at the treasonous level.
It has to go to the undercutting of the American, the country itself. And to me, it's that high. I don't think we've ever had a president engage in that directly, which even Nixon, what he did was supporting a petty theft. And, you know, that is petty theft. Is it a crime? Yes, it is. But is that what's intended in impeaching a president? I don't believe it is.
Now, you say, obviously, Nixon was not impeached.
But he would have been.
He resigned before that happened. And
right.
So it does seem from my history books, now neither one of, well, actually, we were alive at that time, but we weren't really paying attention. But our history books tell us that there was groundswell political support to remove him for what he did.
And I'll point out that that is a function now. People wonder, well, why won't the Republicans vote against Trump? Because a lot of Republicans don't like Trump, and that's true. They won't vote against him because they can look at their support back home, and the support for Trump isn't changing. The American people themselves do not see this as a big issue enough to justify going against your own party, your own president.
You know, I'll even take
it back
one...
then in the early 70s, I think that was a little different. I think people were in the midst of the Vietnam War, and I think people were a little more skeptical of government in general, and they were more willing to go there, and I think that's probably what Nixon's calculation, why he ultimately stepped down.
You know, I'll even take it one step further in reviewing what it was what Trump did. I think we can take the alleged out of it. I think clearly we all know exactly what he did. I think most of us look at that and we say, yeah, that's Trump. That's exactly who was voted into office by the people. I remember a debate where he, in a national audience that was televised, basically said, hey, Russia, give us some more emails. Investigate Hillary Clinton. He said that during a live televised presidential debate. He was elected. I think the American public knew exactly who they were getting when they elected Trump as president.
They wanted somebody who would fight for America at all costs, who would be a negotiator in chief, who would go to these other countries and these trade agreements, whether it be the Pacific Trade Agreement or what was NAFTA is now the USMCA, or European trade relationships, Russia, all of it. They wanted somebody that would go in and put America first in all those negotiations, and they honestly didn't believe that's what had been going on for the previous, I don't know, 40 some 50 years.
Now
that's how Trump's in office.
Right, I mean, he won election. So I don't think he hid his character flaws. I think they were all out there in the open. We all knew exactly who America was voting for when he won the presidency. Kind of shocked people. It shocked me that he won. But nonetheless, he did. And we knew exactly who he was. And so it just seems to me rather, I don't know, contrary to the democratic form of government that we have, that he was... they're now seeking to remove him for being Trump.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And we all know that many on the left side of politics have been arguing since the day he was elected that he should be impeached. And so it makes it a little harder to buy into. It's kind of the crying wolf concept. If you've been crying it for 3 years, now all of a sudden you found something that you say is impeachable. Can we really believe that that's really that big of an issue? Or did you just find something you think is strong enough that now you can actually do what you've been trying to do all along? To me, the Democrats and presidential candidates particularly need to be very careful about being too involved. I know now they're kind of stuck on it with the ones that are in the Senate, but they need to focus on 2020 and the election and try to beat Trump on the issues, not beat him on impeachment and not even beat him on the issues that led to impeachment.
Which we're all going to get there. I mean, we all recognize if you're going to look at this that it's going to play out exactly like we think it is. There is no bipartisan support here for removing him from office. And so this will go back before the American people. And how this plays out, well, I think it's anyone's guess. If this is going to hurt the Democrats, is this a great strategy by Nancy Pelosi that's going to end up taking back winning the presidency for the Democrats, or is this going to blow up in the Democrats' face? Do you have a thought on that?
I tend to think that all politicians, particularly at the highest level, are looking to secure their own position and or the position they want to attain first and foremost. Pelosi's entire effort in this has been to secure herself as the leader of the Democrats in the House. There was a time when she was fighting against impeachment that there was a groundswell of support among a lot of, particularly the younger House members, where you could get the idea that at some point they might choose to go away from Pelosi as the Democratic leader. I think she's done it out of pressure from her own caucus to be that in that position. And right now I think she's trying to navigate it in a way to hurt Trump in the general, thus hurt the Republicans, and try to keep herself as Speaker of the House. I think that is her entire focus.
Now, I want to get your thoughts on this. It seems like, you mentioned earlier, a dangerous precedent that's being set here by this particular impeachment. In my mind, it's because there actually is no crime or misdemeanor. We're not even talking about a traffic violation here. There's not even the smallest misdemeanor here. The two articles of impeachment, obstruction of Congress, what the heck is that? And also abuse of power, that's not a crime. And so, if from my perspective, it's very dangerous as far as setting the precedent of what should be an impeachable offense, that we now have two charges that aren't actually crimes or misdemeanors at all.
It goes into an area of criminal law that I've always had a problem with, and that is the idea that, and we've seen this with a lot of the Trump associates that have been charged, they're not actually charged with crimes, they're charged with lying to the FBI, which brings it to a point that if they had never been investigated for something that didn't happen, they would be clear.
But in that...
And so, go ahead.
That lying to the FBI actually is a crime. I mean, I agree
with
you. It is
a crime, but in a sense, it's almost an entrapment type crime.
It definitely is an entrapment. That's their whole purpose. That's why, by the way, people say, oh, you know what? If Trump wasn't hiding anything, he would let people testify. No, you wouldn't. Take it. We're lawyers here, and you would never let anyone testify unless they have to, because it's a trap. They will get you stuttering. They will get you humming and hawing. And anytime you maybe hedge a little bit in their mind, they can charge you with an actual crime of lying and deceiving the FBI.
Well, you can imagine listening to Joel and I talk here, what we could do if we were trying to get somebody to say what we wanted them to say. And well, hopefully you can imagine that. And the truth of the matter is, a good attorney is always going to be able to ask questions in such a way that forces somebody to go a certain direction. That's part of litigation strategy worldwide. And you always want to be careful. You don't open yourself up to more testimony than is absolutely necessary in any situation.
Oh, yeah. It's called the perjury trap, and they will bring you in. They will get you to not, you don't even have to lie. You just have to say the truth in a certain way that that person disagrees with your version of the facts.
True.
And so if they think that what you said is not consistent with their version of the facts, they can charge you with perjury. And do you know what that means? Lawyer fees. So you got to go out and hire a lawyer, and you very well might lose. And so because of that, that's called the perjury trap. And so they're going to say, look, you know what? You don't even have to go down this road. Just go ahead and give us this information. Say this, and we're not going to bring a charge against you. And so you very well might go ahead and give them what they want so that you can avoid a criminal prosecution. That's why you would never, ever talk to law enforcement unless you have to.
You could make an argument that that's what the American people said back in 1998-99.
I agree 100%.
That the concept of the perjury trap was all they had on Clinton, because if you talk about him committing a crime, it was indeed perjury. What he did with Monica Lewinsky is not officially a crime.
I believe that the American public viewed that as a trap by the opposition party, and so they weren't buying this is really what impeachment should be used
for. That's exactly what happened at that time. I think the American public at the time was right that was a political stunt, and I don't think we've seen anything different this time around.
All right. Well, we'll keep following this, and I hope you bring some common sense to it in your podcast. But the Chief Justice was sworn in this week. He is going to preside over the impeachment trial. Now, this is, I think, fascinating because people think, oh, the Chief Justice, he's actually going to be the judge? That's an important position. No, he's not really going to have any role whatsoever. It's a very political process. He will not get involved in politics. He's just simply going to be there and maybe rule on some motions that might be brought before him. But no, the actual judge here, if you will, the decider of this case will be the 100 senators. But do you have a thought on that?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the Senate trial will run. The Chief Justice is there to provide some decorum and maybe some process to the actual trial, but the majority leader is going to run the trial based on the votes he has behind him, and any other senator can challenge him, and then they'll take a vote, and then on the rules and everything like that, and whatever 51 senators say, or 50 plus Mike Pence say, is going to be how the trial runs.
Now, a couple of issues I want to get your thoughts on. One is Mitch McConnell made some statements before this, somewhere around after the time that the House voted to impeach President Trump and before they were actually delivered to the Senate, that he met with the White House and he said, we're going to do this. He made some comments that suggest that he's going to work hand in glove with the White House in conducting this trial. Now, to some people, that seems wrong. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's interesting that anybody would suggest that a politician would not be political. Given that's probably what I'm trying to do in some realms, but Mitch McConnell has a view of this case that is much like virtually every Republican. He sees it as a sham. So in his mind, he's just going to do whatever he has to based on the process to get it to a final vote as fast as he can and get this beyond him and start worrying about the 2020 elections. He's up for election in Kentucky, by the way. He doesn't want to be messing with impeachment longer than he has to either. So it's the people that then say, oh, he's not taking his duty properly, that's a valid argument in a vacuum, but no, that because those people already know how they're going to vote also, which means they're not taking it. Any Democrat senator that comes in already saying he should be removed from office without having actually viewed all the potential exculpatory evidence that comes in is also prejudging the case. And I think just about every one of the presidential candidates has done that. So I don't know that any of them are pure in the sense of doing their constitutional duties because they're all political. They're all trying to gain a political advantage through this process.
One other thought I want to get your opinion on, witnesses. It has been suggested that they call no witnesses. It's also been suggested that, hey, if the Democrats are going to call witnesses, then the Republicans are going to try to present their side, and we're going to explore the reasons why Trump might have been concerned with corruption in the Ukraine. Any thoughts on the whole calling of witnesses?
Well, there are two ways to look at an impeachment trial in Congress. One is that what the House does is like an indictment, and the Senate actually conducts a trial. Two is that the House conducts a trial and the Senate simply represents that part of the trial where it goes to the jury for deliberation. Very different concepts, because in the first one, the Senate conducting a trial after an indictment should be bringing in witnesses, evidence. That's where you would do it, at the trial. The second one, that's already happened in the House. Now it's just a jury. It's usually we think of it as 12 people in a room. This case, it's 100, deliberating what they've heard at the trial and then running it in and then making a decision. So you have to first determine which way that actually works. Since the House is calling public witnesses and did that in the fall, you tend to think it's more the second, that the Senate now has seen what the House has done. They voted to impeach. Now the Senate needs to deliberate on whether or not they should remove the president. You could make a valid argument, I think, on either side there as whether or not there should be witnesses. I know the only ones that want there to be witnesses are Democrats, and there's only one reason they want it is because they want to get the maximum political value out of it. Republicans want to get it done with and move on as fast as they can. It's really not about procedure. It's about time. So I think that's the argument you're going to get. If, you know, it, at this point, if there are witnesses that should be brought in, I imagine they'll bring them in. I think there's enough votes in the Senate to do that. I think there's three or four Republicans that will side with the Democrats for that. Actually, there may be more. There are probably about 10 to 15 that would. But I don't think they have any chance of getting him removed from office.
Right, right. All right. Well, thank you so much for your take. Very interesting takes. And I guess we'll just and this will be a very quick trial. They say only a couple days and it will be done with. And so we'll have to follow that and see how things play out. All right, well, not sure this is on the same level of grandeur as the impeachment trial, but I also read this last week about the Bluebell ice cream liquor. And apparently in Texas, there was a guy who went to these stores. I believe he went to Walmart. He took a canister of Bluebell ice cream out, licked it, recorded it, and posted it on the social media. Now, Dan, when you went to law school, I believe it was at Vanderbilt Law School.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Did you ever study the law as it relates to licking ice cream?
That's a great question. I don't believe it was licking ice cream, although it seemed like there was a case in torts where we went over a case about whether or not you could eat an ice cream cone walking down a street. There was a town somewhere that had made that illegal.
Okay.
However, I do see this as slightly different. First of all, I'd like to just say Bluebell ice cream is absolutely delicious. And
so you empathize with this person.
So I can see why he's interested in tasting Bluebell ice cream. It is among the better ice creams out there, and it is all over Texas, and it is really good.
So this is no different than grabbing a grape before you buy it to make sure it's a quality grape. He was just testing out the ice cream. Is that your defense?
The difference probably comes down to when you grab a grape and eat it, you're not then handing that to another person to eat the same grape. And this probably is where we have a difference here. This guy's licking the ice cream, putting the lid back on, and then presumably the store is selling it to someone else who then eats the rest of the ice cream with this person's germs and bacteria in the ice cream.
So he posted this on, of course, social media. It goes viral. I think this is a part of a national craze that... Now, I can't tell from this article this guy was the start of this national craze or if he just joined in on it, but nonetheless, he then defended himself by saying he purchased that gallon of ice cream. So he just did this to post it on social media to get a response, but he ended up purchasing the ice cream. Now, as I'm reading the story, my attorney mind then says, well, okay, that's not that bad. He was still charged with criminal mischief. Do you have any thoughts as to is that a good... a use of our laws to go against him here? The ice cream liquor?
Well, first of all, if you've actually seen people eating the product in the store before they buy it, which I think most of us have, you'd have to say that itself is not a problem. The problem comes in is that there was some indication that he had gone to multiple locations and done this. And so if he's, one, done it in multiple locations, then he's obviously not buying it. He's doing it for a stunt. Two, he better have the receipt.
I would agree with that.
I would, from an evidentiary standpoint, I would definitely say he better have the receipt.
I find it convenient that he said he purchased it, but nonetheless, I think our takeaway is it doesn't matter. Even if you did purchase it, this is a criminal mischief charge, and you can see how this would create a lot of harm. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm some kind of old fogey. I am not up for an HOA position just yet in my life, but still, these young people have to realize there are consequences to their actions. And when you post that, you got to know the impact that it's going to have on Walmart. They're going to go through and throw away all of their containers of ice cream because the public is no longer going to purchase Bluebell ice cream. It costs them a lot of money to fix that situation, a lot of damage. I know if I had heard of this, I would not have purchased any Bluebell ice cream. That would have been enough for me. I would have avoided them. And so he was charged with his criminal mischief.
I'm actually a little surprised that Bluebell doesn't simply have sealant or ceilings on their containers. You generally today we expect that to be on most products, and you can tell if somebody's tampered to get into an item. So evidently in Texas, they did not have that on their tubs of ice cream.
Now, wait a second here. That's a good point. Why didn't they have containers? Did they not have them?
Well, that I'm not sure. I haven't seen that, but...
So if they actually did have a wrapper, which I can't even imagine buying ice cream that does not have a wrapper, then would people really be buying these without wrappers on them?
Not if it was the norm that they would have the wrapper on. And then the wrapper's off. I think people, not everybody would notice, but most people would notice that this wrapper's been messed with or it's off, and they wouldn't buy that one. They'd buy another one that's fully sealed.
Every ice cream that I buy, I'm thinking I actually have to cut that wrap, that seal off, but maybe Blue Bell ice cream does not have the seal on it.
Need to go back to Texas, I guess, and sample and see if they do.
But. You know what? That is going to be my task this week. I am going to go out and test that out just because I love ice cream that much. All right, let's move on here now to our next story. And this comes in the area of law. You just can't make this stuff up. And so here's a headline. Pornhub was sued by a deaf man over adult video sites' alleged lack of subtitles. Apparently, this deaf person went to Pornhub, which is apparently this website where it traffics in pornography, and so you can go to that site. And this deaf person went. Now, Dan, I got just a minute as I am reading this article. My mind went to this place. Do people really go to Pornhub because of the compelling dialogue? Because I am thinking that the dialogue is not really the selling point in Pornhub's business model.
Well, I would think that it probably is not. But then again, you know, for those of us that grew up in the 70s and 80s, there's no doubt that we really did read Playboy for the articles. So,
of course, yes.
I think, you know, compelling maybe articles. There's a little bit of understanding here that this could be considered different.
You read Playboy for the articles, you go to Pornhub for the compelling dialogue. Hey, Academy Award, pay attention here. There might be some great storylines that you are missing. I don't know if you need to stay tuned. I'm not sure I'm doing updates on this case, but I guarantee you, if there is an update, we will bring it to you to see how this case turns out. All right, lastly, Dan, I want to cover the area which is near and dear to my heart, which is movies. Now, I'm a big movie buff. It was Rambo. I just watched Rambo recently. I'm a big Sylvester Stallone fan. And we are talking about in the area of the Academy Awards. It's coming out here in February. We're going to have our own Academy Awards. I want from you some suggestions. We're going to do an Academy Awards over the best movies and TV shows as they depict the legal profession. And so I'm going to put you on the spot here and ask you to give a recommendation of what would be your best picture when it comes to movies that depict the legal profession.
My favorite movies in the legal profession have always been John Grisham. So you could pick any number.
All right, I'm thinking Rainmaker.
The Firm I really enjoyed. The Client was good. My favorite movie all time that involves some elements around the legal profession is Pelican Brief. And that's just, it combines everything I like. Action, government,
all right,
intrigue, and killing Supreme Court justices somehow fit in that too. Which is probably not a good thing.
We are officially against that idea.
A very intriguing movie. That one, it's not really a legal movie per se. There's not a lot of courtroom activity and stuff like that. But obviously with the Supreme Court involved and with the high stakes political.
All right, good nominations.
Those were my favorites.
We'll add all those to the list. How about Best Actor?
For legal?
Yes.
Well... There's been some that look like they belong in a courtroom. There's no doubt.
When you say there's some that look like they belong in a courtroom, what are you talking about?
They're smooth.
Oh, I thought you meant they're ugly. All right, go on.
That's a different issue, but those are the people that belong in podcasts. They
have you been told you have a face for podcasting?
I have not yet, but I will be.
All right.
My favorite all-time lawyer in television and movies is Perry Mason.
Perry Mason.
So.
All right. Well, that's definitely an old-time. I'll have to find some Perry Masons to watch to add them to our best shows. So you give him some good recommendations. Now, you said Perry Mason as in the actor, Perry Mason, or the actual show.
Well, how his performance is in the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that Perry Mason moment in court?
In reverse.
What do you mean by that?
I've had cases end on the spot based on someone's testimony.
Interesting.
In one case, my client was absolutely winning a divorce case. The wife evidence had just been submitted that she had been pulled over for drug use in another state and had been arrested. And so he was going to win custody. And the judge said, all right, we're just going to finalize this. All I need is for both of you to go downstairs and take a drug test right now. And I looked at my client and I said, that's not a problem, is it? And he had this horrified look on his face and he's like, this isn't good. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And he, of course, was on drugs at the trial. So
that reminds me of a...
So that case ended right then and there. And I think that qualifies as something of a Perry Mason moment in a sense where somebody says something and it blows the whole case open.
Yes, we did a podcast recently over worst legal or times when it might be time to get a new lawyer. That might fit in the category of times it might be time to get a new client.
It's amazing that's how that worked out.
Yeah, I can see that in both ways. So, all right, well, thank you so much for Dan for coming. I appreciate it. And I loved your input on these cases, and good luck with your podcast.
All right, thank you very much.